Welcome to the 16th edition of the Smuggler's Den, brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena. Make sure you go to GameEmpirePasadena.com for all your gaming needs, especially the new Edge of Darkness box, which is supposed to drop, I hear, very soon. What do you hear, Ben?
According to the distributors at Game Empire, we'll have them by next Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, order them there, or better yet, come by the store, play with Ben and I and our amazing metamates, pick up a box, and enjoy the release party together with us. We are specifically moving our gaming night from Wednesday to Thursday just so we can have fun with a new box. And I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and as always, I'm joined by...
I'm Ben Tully. I go by Scarlet Knight on the boards. Make sure you check out our podcast at our various social media outlets. You can email us directly at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook, like it, and then get part of the discussion going on there. That's just The Smuggler's Den when you search for it on Facebook. And don't forget, every so often, and by every so often I mean far too often, Tiny will stream live games and comment on them as he goes at twitchtv.com/tinygrimes.
And I'm going to give you a hint. When the new box comes out, and that ends up on Octagon, I will be streaming way too many games.
I feel like you have other life requirements that you have to. Don't you have to eat, talk to other people, go to your job, any of these things that require the time that nobody else gets to put in on Octagon like you do?
Being a professor and having it be summer has its benefits. Now, should I be doing lots of other work? Yes. But I make poor life decisions.
I think you should keep doing exactly what you're doing, Tiny, and figure out what the best decks are. Tell me, and then I can beat you with them. How does that sound?
Well, what makes it worse is not only do I tell you, but I tell the whole world. So I put in all the time, and then everyone else beats me with my own decks. I really don't like that strategy.
Yeah, well, I imagine I feel like you must be going – you have like a window where you're going to go completely like – dark blackout in terms of information on the decks you're playing. Maybe like 2 months before Worlds, you're simply like, nope, nobody knows anymore. I'll tell you afterwards.
No, before Worlds, I'll be playing like all rainbow decks and going, no, this is the best deck. You got to get all the factions in.
Otherwise, you're not doing it right.
Also, follow the Octagon tournament that we're hosting on CardGameDB. We have 60 entrants for the tournament.
Holy Jesus. How many rounds of Swiss are you doing on that?
100. Now, we're going to do 5 rounds of Swiss and cut to a top 16. If you would like to donate prizes to the event, go ahead and do so, and then we'll mention you as a supporter. So Top Tier Gaming, for instance, has contributed some alternate art faction cards. So thank you to them. They're one of the official sponsors of the event.
Official sponsors of an event. Wow.
So Ben,
I don't even understand how we are where we are right now, Tiny. hosting a tournament with official sponsors. Yeah. I feel like this is too legit now. We have to go back to our roots.
We need to scale back. Is that what
you're saying? Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All right. You hear that? The tournament's off. No, the tournament's not off. So,
let's just go back to Flame Wars on the internet. I think that's a much better way to go.
Yeah, I like to take the high road on those. Flame Wars are not fun for me. But so keep track of the tournament. Come to CardGameDB, root for all your favorite players, and talk smack about the other ones, I guess.
But not too much smack, because we don't want you to get banned by Darkspain.
Yeah, that's true. We don't want that. But yeah. He has been incredibly tolerant of people saying just terrible things and just kind of going, now, don't do that. So, I feel like on some other boards, certain people would not be on those boards anymore.
Mm. You think the FFG ones, they would start banning? Oh, has everybody checked out the new FFG boards? They actually work. Have you seen this, Tiny?
I have. They are sleek. They work. And they're still pretty empty because no one knows they work.
Yeah, nobody's visited them in several months because all of the other sites have picked up all the regular chatter.
Yeah, but definitely go back. There's some stuff on there, and yeah, they're real good. I just clicked something and it instantly came up. It was almost like we were living in the 2010s. Instead of like,
it's almost like the internet has been around commercially for 20 years now.
Right. It was kind of like we were living in 1995 and had like a 1200 baud modem. Wait, like it seemed odd that they hadn't upgraded from that, but now they have, and it is excellent.
It is really good. And the more people that we can get back on there, maybe parallel posts, and, you know, different people getting on there, it's good because people have been posting and being like, why are the forums so quiet? Is everybody quit the game already? Across the board, I think if anything, Game of Thrones and Star Wars has been suffering similar people posting and asking why nobody ever uses the official boards.
Yep. And I'd like to say, officially, I think the game is doing really well. Our meta is still growing and growing. Every week or two, we add another one or two people. We just added another person last week, and things are going really well. I have a question for you about the Edge of Darkness box. Do you consider it a plus or a negative that we have to buy two of them?
I think either way you slice it, it's going to come out to be a very similar answer. But what it comes down to is that FFG, I can imagine, wanted to supply the most objectives that they could to flesh out the two factions that didn't get anything in, or very limited stuff in the core set. So FFG wanted to provide all these cards, and there are 22 objective sets in this box. And so the production cost, I mean, if you look at it on a scale of how much the box costs, which is $35, and how much a force pack costs, which only normally nets you six objective sets, or five, depending if there's two copies of each, it's at $15. They're giving you three force packs worth plus some for less than the cost of three force packs. And yes, you don't get duplicates, but it's the only way they can do it to control costs. I really think that, you know, otherwise you'd be paying $70 and we'd be complaining about how, why are we paying $70 for one product? It's not even a core set. But, I think that's the way you do it. It's a business model. They're still actually trying to make money, FFG, as much as they try very hard not to make money. FFG is desperately still a business and would like to continue to provide products to people based on market capitalism. And so, two core sets, it's rarely something that's going to happen. We only know of one other box in existence out there that's going to come down the pipeline. So it's not like a regular thing yet, I don't think. You know, we're not playtesters of any kind in that type of distance of how far out FFG is, so don't say it, never say never. But for right now, it looks like it's just going to be force packs from now on. So the fact that you're going to get complete play sets of Scum and Villainy and Smugglers and Spies, you know, and it's only a one-time cost, still better than in most scenarios in terms of the square deal that you get.
Yeah, I mean, my answer is way more simple, and it's just this. The game is tiny. I want more cards. You know, I'm happy to buy two of something if it's going to give me more cards. And that's really what it comes down to. So I've seen people complain about this, and I always kind of shake my head and say, really? You really wanted 11 new objective sets with how small this card pool is? No, give me more cards. I mean, I would have paid more for more cards. Like if they had said, okay, this is a monster set. It's like another core, and it's going to have 30 objectives. I'd have been like, okay, I'll pay it. Like, let's get this game to have more objectives faster so we have more diversity. Now, in 2 years from now, when it's already a huge card pool, if they do the same thing, at that point I might think something like, do we really need to do that? But right now I think it was definitely the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, it's FFG though, right? So they set up a model of how they sell cards, and for the most part, they don't change it. I mean, that's not 100% true. I mean, when they switched over from the CCG to the LCG in Game of Thrones, the chapter packs there had some cards that were in 1x copy and some cards that were in 3x copy.
Yeah.
And the ones in 3x copy tended to be the not good cards. And so to get a complete playset of the good cards, you'd have to shell out $45 for just one chapter pack.
Yeah, and just to be clear, they broke away from that model as
right. And so that I was going to point that out. And so I don't think it's impossible. I mean, yes, they're setting a standard, and yes, this is how they've always sold. Well, I guess it's not. I mean, it's how they sold Star Wars. Eventually, they moved over to that model for a Game of Thrones too. But they were also providing much less cards, right? You'd only get a stack. It was only 25 new cards in a Game of Thrones for any of those house boxes once you went to 3 copies of each card.
Right. Yep. So that's that. I basically, I'll pay whatever FFC. You have me. You have me.
You had me at hello.
Position where I just want cards.
I believe it's called over a barrel.
I believe that is an apt expression here. Thank you, Dr. Tully.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to the meat of the episode.
None of this banter. Stop bantering. And get to something substantial, Tiny.
Sounds good. So yeah. Let's talk about the chapter pack.
Let's talk about the force pack.
Let's talk about the force pack. Good call. So last week I reviewed it with TGO. And of course, this is a week later, lots more playtesting, so you'll hear a different perspective from me, and you'll get to hear an entirely new perspective from Ben. So I'm going to start with you, Ben. What is your favorite objective set from this pack?
I imagine this one's not going to be too much of a surprise. That's a pretty close one, though. I was about to say that I have really only experience with the light side and not the dark side ones, but that's a lie. The only objective set that I don't have a lot of experience with is the Lucrative Contract objective set. I haven't played that one. So that's all going to be based on what I've seen other people do with it and just how it feels playing. But I would say my favorite objective set, the one that I think is most well-rounded and has really been providing, but it only comes in a very close second, or there's a very close second to it and actually is supportive, is the General's Imperative. The General's Imperative objective set. And so that comes with General Veers, 2 Blizzard Force AT-STs, Turbo Laser Battery, and a Battle of Hoth fate card.
Have you gotten a chance to play with this much?
I have played. I played last week. I didn't get to play any Dark Side decks this week because I came so late to weekly game night. But last week I played a bunch of games with it using a version of the Desolation of Hoth deck. That is going around the dark side one that uses all Hoth objectives.
Wait. When you say that is going around, you mean that Tiny Grimes invented, right?
Well, no, I don't think I mean that. I don't know if I can give you credit to being able to take all of the dark side objectives that have the word Hoth in it and putting them in one deck and being like, well, I invented this. Look what I did. I read all the cards and they all said the word Hoth, so I thought I would put them together.
Ben. No one else would have thought of that. You know that.
God. I really hope people can tell that you're being sarcastic as you say that out loud, because I think otherwise they're going to be burning you an effigy across the planet tonight.
Yes. As I've said many times, with this tiny card pool, there really is no inventing. I put it together, as did, I'm sure, 20 other people, but because I streamed it and played it, I stuck a name on it. Feel free to call it whatever you want.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I'm even playing a different version of it, and I sat down and I told you that I was, and you were like, well, that's not how it's supposed to work. And I was like, well, I don't even know what you're telling me here. Like, I can't have a different version of the deck. And it's not different that much. You run 2 copies of the Modipod, and I run 1 copy of the Modipod and 1 copy of the Death Squadron Star Destroyer pod.
Yep, which that's I'm only, actually wondering
that's
if that's
a better only the only difference. And I really like it because you get that. I really, since... You know, and this is not anything about the new Force pack, but since that card has come out, the Death Star Squadron Command Center has come out, I have loved it more and more and more and more. Every time I play it, it just becomes even so – it just feels so much stronger each time I get it on the board.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm like, oh, man, I'm sitting there hoping to get it, like early game. I'm like, I really hope I get it. Death Squadron Command Center, this game, it'll really help me out right now.
Yeah, I feel like that's a pro card. Like, there's a couple of cards in the game that are pro cards because that card, you have to really have the foresight for 1 or 2 turns to figure out how many objectives are dying. You know, so how much can I load this up how can I plan around it?
Right. Yeah. No, and it's pretty good. I mean, it adds to the fact that the Death Squadron set that what I'm really enjoying about it is its combination with the card that we'll talk about in a second from the other objective that I really like from the dark side. But the card is Forward Command Post, which gives the Star Destroyers the extra blast damage. That has been amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to see which build of Desolation of Hoth is better. My build is more about all cheap dudes, anything over three, I just toss instantly into edge battles or just discard them. Like, Stark never hits the table except if I desperately need a tactics icon at that moment. Otherwise, I wouldn't play it. So it makes it interesting. I'm sure I'll play your build because I think it sounds like a good alternative. But I'm just wondering how often the capital ship is going to hit the table. I'm guessing not that often.
I mean, so I think I've been playing it differently than you have, the deck. I know that and I've used Colonel Stark a bunch of times in the edge battle. But once you start getting those resources, so, you know, in the games I was playing, if I remember off the top of my head, I probably had something like, you know, the Death Squadron Command Center out, maybe one or two forward commands, probably just one forward command center, for command post, a couple of the resource chuds, you know, however it worked. And I, at one point I was like, well, the best card in my hand is Colonel Stark. I'm going to put him into play and wreck face with him because he has that tactics icon that is pretty rare in that deck. You know, so I've definitely played him before and not regretted it and done a bunch of damage with him.
Yep, I have too, but I found him to be much more a late game card.
Sure, okay. It's a board position card. You don't play him every time you get him. You play him when it makes sense in the course of the board position.
Yep, like basically I mean he's not a card I'm going to save. If I see him early game, I'm just going to discard him. But if I draw him late game, I already have the resources, I already have stuff, then I might play him.
Right, he becomes really strong then.
Yep.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the cards in the first objective set, this General's Imperative.
Let's start with the objective itself. How strong do you think it is?
Bonkers strong.
Yeah,
on the scale of strong to amazingly broken strong, it's bonkers strong.
We could probably simplify that with a scale of 1 to 5.
No, I'm not going to do that. It's bonkers strong.
Okay, it's bonkers.
It's like 1.5 thumbs up.
Okay. And so you are not scared off by the text of while this objective is undamaged.
I'm not scared off by it. There's a couple things about it. And I realize it puts a lot of pressure on your opponent because the version of the deck, that Desolation of Hoth deck, has so many battles of Hoth in it. If your opponent isn't concentrating on taking that objective out, if they're like, okay, I'm just going to put one damage on it, and then that's going to be it, and I'll be fine because then it doesn't get its ability. And you play a Battle of Hoth, and you can clear its damage, and all of a sudden you get your card back.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. I mean, that's a good way of doing it. And it forces your opponent to make that decision. You might have much better options, right? Or they're going to, you know, they might not want to put a lot of damage on it because it's a Hoth objective, and you'll get to do something like play Desolation of Hoth the event.
Yep.
And they're purposely trying to avoid that. But, you know, with only one or two damage on it, you can clear it pretty effectively. And that first turn, just starting, I mean, it's like reconnaissance mission, right? Yeah. You're always happy when you see reconnaissance mission for the dark side, and you get that extra card right away. And so the fact that on that first turn you get 7 cards, that's already kind of a big enough bonus for it. And the possibility that you know, you don't normally have your opponent tacking, you know, really heavily on that first turn. It's normally something you can defend or, you know, whatever the play happens to be. I mean, maybe they do. I mean, it depends on the deck. It might be a rebel deck that you're playing and they might get some good cards right away. But it's one of those things where I feel like you can normally mitigate enough damage that then you got to use it a second turn. And then it's already kind of, you know, it's good enough card to have, you know, kept it as one of your starting objectives.
Yeah. I've played Desolation of Hoth a lot of times and I've had the majority of the games it's been online the whole game.
Yeah.
Like there might be a turn in there where I didn't draw a Battle of Hoth and it stayed damaged, but it's been a big boon. I've had a bunch of games where I just start the game with two of them.
And I mean, somebody came up to us and asked that last night at game night. It was like, if I have two of these, do I get a starting hand of 8? And we were like, yes. And they're like, that's crazy.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
However, I'll say this, that I feel like this objective is crazy good in Desolation of Hoth. But my question would be, will it be good on a broader level? Like, we have a card like Veers who definitely helps trooper decks.
Right.
And so then, if you're not running many Hoth decks, is it going to be as good, would be my question then. Because in that circumstance, I would think they would just try to kill it. Because right. it's too good.
Right. I don't know. I haven't played it in a non-Hoth deck. It's hard to say how many of these kind of objectives that seem to really synergize well with each other, how many of them are going to carry over into like the next iteration or phase of Star Wars, right? Like, are we ever going to want to play Hoth objectives without other corresponding Hoth objectives? And will you always be in a position where, you know, it's one of those decisions that you'll have to make, and as a player, you're going to have to know that, okay, if my deck goes up against a Hoth deck, I don't have any of those Hoth objectives, and my opponent might, and I'm going to lose, you know, somewhat more frequently because of the synergy of their Hoth objectives that they're going to have that I won't have with my objectives. And I think that's just one of those things. Like, do you lose the synergy? Yes. Do you gain the fact that then General Veers becomes a key card for your troopers? Yes.
Yeah. So I tend to rate this as a Hoth card, like you're saying. I think it just functions best in a Hoth deck. And Veers helps walkers, and walkers are going to fit well in Hoth decks. It feels like to me that this is like the linchpin of Hoth decks. Like, Hoth decks before this weren't practical because you couldn't do enough with them. This makes it so you're like, yeah, you can really make a really good Hoth deck now.
Yeah, it's not bad. So the other cards that we talked about a little bit, General Veers, he's a 3-cost character with 2 health capacity, generates a resource, he has a black tactics, a white blast damage, and then protects each walker and each trooper unit you control gain a black character damage icon.
Yep.
It's pretty good. But I think my favorite card...
Wait. I want to stop with him for a second.
Sure.
So you read all that amazing stuff about him.
Yeah.
And I still look at him and go, I don't know if he's worth playing. I mean, I can't figure out if I'm just insane or what's going on, but at 3 cost for only 2 health, if I'm going to use him as a resource, like, I just always hesitate to play this guy.
Sure. I mean, I can see the hesitation. He's strong, but I to be honest, I would, you know, pat FFG on the back for making him fairly balanced.
Yeah.
I know we spend a lot of time bad-mouthing FFG. I know, and it's weird because we like them so much as like a company and people some of the time. But I would really say the playtesters did a good job, and the card designers did a good job of making Veers because he could have been easily overpowered.
Yeah, you know,
just a little bit of tweaking on this card, and he would have been overpowered.
I assumed he would be. I assumed he would be elite, and that he would have 3 health, and then have the same cost. That's kind of what I assumed I'd see with Veers.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that it's balanced isn't a bad thing. Stop that power creep.
Yeah, and maybe that's the problem. I looked at him and I was like, he's balanced and he's Veers. This feels weird.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you look at Luke and you're like, yeah, no, that's an unbalanced card.
Yeah, but I mean, Luke makes sense, right? Veers, you see Veers like 3 times in the movie.
Dude, Veers is a legendary figure.
I get it. He blows up the shield generator. He's badass, but
the funny thing is, I don't even remember Veers from the movies. I only know him just from pop culture and talking about Veers in other games. Veers is always cool.
That doesn't surprise me. You like the prequel, so.
Yeah, I like Mace Windu. He's a bad mofo.
Oh, God. I really could have really, really degenerated into an off-topic conversation right there, but I won't.
Yeah, let's just be clear, though. I do not like the prequels better. I'm just not a hater on the level of other people. But I will say this. When the first one came out, it basically took me from a rabid Star Wars fan from when I was a child to like a crying adult man saying, why have I wasted all my time with Star Wars? So I do side with everyone else in that regard.
Interesting.
I just come a little bit farther along than others in not hating them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's another topic.
Yep, that's, so the other cards that I think, and really are my favorite. And I really thought to some degree that Turbo Laser Battery was going to be one of my favorite cards, but I really haven't found a use for it yet. Mm. But my favorite cards have been, and again, this is kind of because of in conjunction with the other Hoth Dark Side Objective that came out in the Force Pack, but are the Blizzard Force ATSCs.
Yeah.
They're crazy. Two, I know they have one, but they have shielding, and that one objective damage and that shielding combo with forward command post where they become two objective damage.
Yeah.
It's just so good. It's so good. It's so good. They're so strong.
Then if you have Veers out, they got a gun also.
They can do a unit damage as well.
Yeah, they're especially in that Desolation of Hoth deck where your goal is to play two cost units every turn. They fit right in an amazing way.
Yes, they do. I agree.
Turbo Laser Battery, I found to be one of those cards that's either useless or amazing.
Right.
And here's why. I don't know if you've heard of this card, Echo Caverns.
Yeah, what is that? I've never heard of that card.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good card.
Is that in this game?
Yes. This blows up that pretty good card.
Right. It blows up all of the pretty good cards, though.
Yeah.
So it targets the non-limited ones, right?
Yep.
But that means... And so the problem was, is the couple times I've seen it, I've had things on the table like forward command post, guest squadron, command center, all of these non-limited resource enhancements. And I'm like, I can't play this. I don't want to lose all of these resources. Yes, I would take out something like Echo Caverns, but I can play around Echo Caverns if I have 9 units on the table.
Yeah, it hits limited ones as well, by the way.
Oh, does it? It's everything.
Yeah. And that's one of the differences between our decks is that mine doesn't really run enhancements. It has the forward command post, but if I can blow up one forward command post and I get rid of Echo Caverns, 2 resources, and 2 enhancements on Yoda, then it was well worth it.
Yeah, that's definitely worth it in that situation. I and that's probably the big difference between how you would play the decks and the usefulness of that card. I mean, I just still feel like because you're not playing, because your version of the deck relies on the weenie resource characters a little bit more. I mean, maybe it doesn't. Maybe I'm thinking about your deck wrong. It's just inviting. Doesn't it seem like it's inviting death from Han Solo?
Yeah, it definitely does. But it's also just based around having 4 resources. Like, that's what it deals with. It puts out.
You think that having 4 resources for that deck is ideal?
No, it's not ideal. I would much rather have more resources, but it works with it because all the dudes are 2 cost. So most turns, you're putting out 2, some turns 3 with a Wampa. With 2 Mahdis, as long as they're not Rebel Assaulting guys or killing immediately with Han, you start getting more of the resource chuds going, the forward command post. By the end of the game, you're putting out 3 to 4, but for those first couple turns, you're still putting 2 to 3 dudes out every turn, and that's fine.
Okay.
Because they're quality guys. Like in Jedi, when you play a 2-cost dude, he'll have, 1 unit damage, or maybe 2 unit damage, or a unit damage and a white blast icon. These dudes are amazing. They have all this damage, all these icons. They're really good 2-cost guys.
Stupid Jedi.
And of course we followed up with, it has a Battle of Hoth, which synergizes really well with General's Imperative.
Yep. When you were talking about pro cards, that seems like it's a pro card.
Yeah. Right, it took me a while to realize just how good that card was. In fact,
it just has so many utilities, right? Ranging from the time that you blew up your own Hoth objective to bounce your opponent's Emperor back to their hand.
Emperor and Devastator
back to their hand. To the time last night where if you just drew 2 Battles of Hoth in our game, you won the game.
Right.
Because you could play them both, and as long as there wasn't a Twist of Fate, you took out the objective that you were targeting. I mean, it just has a lot of versatility, and it's the matter of, going back to removing damage from your own objectives, knowing when it's not an offensive card and when it's a defensive card. I mean, I just think there's a lot of opportunities with it.
Yeah, it combos so well with Killing Cold. It just makes it really hard to kill Killing Cold. And it makes it hard to turn off General's Imperative, because what I like to do is they'll attack, they'll hit General's Imperative for the one that they need to turn it off. I'll just let that go. Then they'll turn around and attack another objective, and I'm like, okay, Battle of Hoth, pull it off Imperative. And they're just like, son of a...
Right.
So
Cactus.
It is definitely a pro card.
Yeah.
You know what? That sounds like a segment for next time. The top
what are the pro cards? Pro cards. Cards that are, they appear very okay cards, but if you play them at the right time with the right understanding of how the game works.
Yeah, they can even be good. What I call a pro card is one that has versatility and has like almost these hidden uses that only more advanced players are going to see, like this third level usage out of the card. What's your next favorite objective?
So my next favorite objective is Sabotage in the Snow, which is another dark side. It's a limit one per objective deck, dark side neutral objective. The objective itself is okay. Has the reaction after the conflict phase begins, move one shield from a target enemy card to a target friendly card, which is great. It's not a bad, I'm not saying it's a bad objective. It has its uses though, right? There are definitely going to be some decks where your opponent's just not going to have any shields.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty bad card. Like, it's only going to work in very specific spots, and usually only if your opponent makes a mistake.
Sure. It's possible. I mean, I just think it for the times it does work, it combos really nicely with what I think is the major card in this objective set, which is Forward Command Post.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, which you get two copies of. It's an enhancement, enhance your play area, two resources. It generates one. Your friendly shielded unit gains a objective blast damage.
Yep.
And that's just crazy.
Yeah, and you get to go through the deck pretty quick, because if you have one or two General's Imperatives, you're playing a ton of cards, you're discarding a lot. I've had many games where I've had two of these out, and then that AT-ST is just insane. Three blast damage.
Does a lot. I mean, the other card, and I think, so this is probably a great example of power creep, is the Snowtrooper Vanguard, which is 3 cost, 3 health capacity, 3 black character unit damage, and shielding.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we already had in the Tarkin pod, was it Elite Stormtrooper, whatever the last word is, it's a 3-word title, Elite Stormtrooper Guard something, which is a 3-3 with 3 character, black character damage. So you have the exact same card, but with shielding.
Yep. And this guy is not Imperial, so if you get resource screwed, you can play him still.
Yep. When I saw this, I was like, well, that's an extreme example of power creep right there.
Yeah, he's that card where if you put that out, your opponent is just like, yeah, so I've pretty much come close to losing here.
Right. I can't because, get like, through.
They attack with Luke, and you're doing 3 damage, like even with a guardian out, it chews through the guardians right away. It's really hard to attack with him on the table.
Yeah, I did. When I the first time I got to play him, I was like, I forget even who I was playing. And I was like, yes, this is awesome. Storm, you know, Snowtrooper Vanguard, you're so done. And like they attacked, I put the shield on him. Maybe I didn't, I might have put the shield on the objective. I think I was being overly cocky at the time. They had 2 heats of battle, won the edge battle, and killed him before it struck. And I was like, oh, well, that didn't go exactly the way I had envisioned it happening. So there was that side effect. I was fairly unhappy with that.
So what you're saying is he's so good, you might get cocky and use him poorly.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's exactly what happened.
That's interesting. And even the Snowtrooper.
Yeah, it's been one for one, two edge dependent blasters. It makes your opponent still have to decide if you're on defense to play that edge card or not.
Yep, definitely. So this is a really strong pod. It's a good thing this is a one of pod. If you could, wow. So just imagine if you could have 2 of this objective and have 4 forward command posts out.
Yeah.
Oh my. So good thing it's limited to 1.
Good thing it's limited to 1.
All right, Ben, so there's only 1 more dark side deck.
Yeah, let's tackle it. Like I said, I haven't played it much. I've only seen it played. You can feel free to comment on it. I feel like you probably already have to other people. Or like last time you talked with TGO. I know I played a game when you had it, and you were fairly upset with what it did.
Yeah. So this is going to be amazing in the future, right?
Hopefully. So this is Lucrative Contract. It's a Scum and Villainy affiliation-only objective set. Generates two resources, has a reaction. After you refresh, remove one focus token from a target, mercenary, or bounty hunter unit.
Yeah, so that's going to be really good. It's going to make it much harder to lock down those bounty hunters or mercenaries. So the objective itself is good. The card in it that is, I think, like broken, and maybe the most broken card I've seen so far in the game, is Corrupt Official. And he says, when a Scum and Villainy objective would be damaged, discard this unit from hand to cancel any amount of the damage. I haven't gotten to see this because we haven't had the ability to play all Scum Pods, but I just think about it, and it seems insane because the main way Rebels win is to do, like, Rogue 3 with an enhancement. So he swings in and does four blasts, and you just go, I'll discard that guy.
Right.
And they're like, oh, wow. Okay, I'll Rebel Assault. I'll discard the other one. And
it's
you get
really,
four of them.
Right. And, I mean, it's really interesting that it's just not an event card. Right? I mean, so because you essentially get to play it free, where if it was an event card, it would probably have a cost.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, his ability is so phenomenal, I didn't even look at his stats. And his stats are really good.
Two cost, three health. One black character icon.
Yeah. I mean, 2 for 3, we don't really see much 2 for 3. No. Two cost is usually 2 or 1.
Right.
It's really funny that this is how these games usually work. There's like some no-name, like throwaway character that just totally breaks the game. This is the guy that I feel like could make Scum an amazing control deck, because I just don't see how people do damage against you.
Right. I mean, and the interesting thing will be if there's some way of recurring him.
Oh,
so
my
if there's
goodness.
Some way of after you've played him to bring him back to your hand.
I sure hope there's not. That would be really too much at that point.
So I have 4 of them in my deck, but I'm going to need to play him 5 times.
That would be too much. We'll assume that there's no way to do that.
Okay. The other cards in this objective set are only so-so. So one of the downsides to Corrupt Official, not a mercenary, not a bounty hunter.
Yep.
The only mercenary that you get in the objective set is the Outer Rim Space Pirates. And so this is a vehicle mercenary Black Sun, our first look at a Black Sun traded card. This card just, it doesn't seem to know what it wants to do. It's 5 cost, it has 3 force icons, it has 4 health capacity. It has 2 black character damage, a white tactics, and it also generates 3 resources. Like, why?
Well, I mean, we've got Lucrative Contract, so if you double focus it and have it out, it'll come back every time.
Sure. But there's only one copy of it. It's not something that you're going to see very consistently for, like, this card, right? I'm sure somebody good at math could tell you this, but like, what are the odds of if you're playing this in a completely Scum and Villainy based deck and you only have 2 copies of Outer Rim Pirates and 2 copies of Lucrative Contract? I know you'll be able to use Lucrative Contract for other things, but how often are you going to see them both at the same time?
There's that card that is when you there's some card about capturing that
when you capture them, you can clear something. Yeah, that's the one that Boba Fett comes with,
and there's going to be a lot of capturing.
But are you ever going to play Boba Fett's objective just for that?
Probably not, but you never know.
So, there you go.
And there might be something similar to it. I look at this card and I think, I don't know what to do with it now. It seems really overpriced for what you're getting, but maybe it's going to be really good.
Right.
It's that card that I'm holding out judgment on because, like you said, it doesn't know what it wants to do with itself. I view it differently. I view it as, I don't really know what I'm supposed to do with it yet. I feel like without a broader card pool, its usage has not been fully defined for me.
Sure. The other cards in the objective set is a good event. I really think this is a pretty strong event. It's called Explosive Charge, 1 cost. has one force icon. Action, discard a target enhancement with a printed cost equal to or lower equal to or lower than the number of enhancements you control. So it's one of those things, you build it up, you get three enhancements on the table, boom, you take out, or two enhancements, you take out Echo Caverns.
Yeah, I think this card and Corrupt Official are why this pod is amazing.
Also, don't forget, Tiny, it has a Twist of Fate.
Yes, and Twist of Fates are always nice to have.
Yep.
But back to Explosive Charge, I think that card is really, really good. Like, I'm not sure we could oversell its usefulness.
Yeah, no, it is really strong. But going back to the Twist of Fate side of it, I know we have a discussion a bunch of times about how you can get these fairly decent-looking pods or objective sets that just don't have resources, right? And it makes it very difficult to sub it in for something that does give you a resource in its objective set. But in this case, when you have Twist of Fate as that fifth card in the objective set, or as the fifth playable card in your objective set, I mean, the fact that this doesn't, I mean, it generates an inconsistent resource with a five cost unit doesn't bother me as much because I get that extra Twist of Fate.
Yeah, I agree. I actually played this objective set in a Sith control deck. I did this, the Weequays, Palpatine, Vader, and Cruel Interrogations to capture for the Weequays. And basically, the Outer Rim Space Pirates were the resources. So I was using them and lucrative contracts, and then I used one to get another one out, and I had two of them going, and I was always getting a zillion resources. And so that one game, I was like, oh my goodness, this works great. And then in another game, I got like half of the combo and was like, this is the worst thing ever. So we'll have to see how it goes. But I would say right now in the current card pool, until next Thursday, this pod is all but unplayable. But come Thursday, it's going to be an MVP.
So let's do the opposite for the light side as we did the dark side. And I'm going to tell you my least favorite light side objective.
Oh, can I guess it?
I think you can guess it. Go for it.
Is it the Last Defensive Hoth?
It is the Last Defensive Hoth.
That was a hard guess.
I mean, and this is one of those things, right, where like, last episode, it had just been completely spoiled. And we were both like, I can't wait to play with this objective set. And then we got it, and I had my hands on it, and I played my first game with it, and I was like, never mind. Yeah. Never mind. I was really excited. I'm not so excited anymore.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad because I'm realizing that, you know, I'm building up this Smuggler Hoth deck, and there aren't going to be any more Smuggler Hoth pods. Like, this is it. Unless by some miracle, they're like, yeah, we should have Hoth in the Smuggler's box, but I just don't see that happening.
Right.
And so it's making me kind of sad that if I want to play a Smuggler's Hoth deck, I will always be stuck with this pod.
Right. Yeah, no, it was one of those ones. I mean, Cole Sarah just is not what I thought he would be. And so maybe I'm wrong, and I've seen some builds out there and people who have been trying this just on the boards and things like that. And in general, I feel like they're trying to sub it in for other objective sets that were already in decks. And I think that we're the optimal version of that, I think I really thought that Cole Sarah with his Edge 1 combined with the Snow Speeder objective, the Hoth operations with Snow Speeders getting their Edge 1 bonus was really going to be something to turn the tides against Sith decks or decks that had really good Edge battle, you know, stuff from the dark side. I really thought that. And as soon as I played him, I was like, nope, this is not going to happen. It puts a little bit of pressure on it, but it just doesn't combo that well because he's fairly expensive. You don't have the resources. You can either choose to put out Snow Speeders or you can put out him. Yeah. And every time I was putting out Snow Speeders.
Yeah, I think in the current card pool, he's way overcosted. Like, we talked about Power Creep. He's like the complete opposite of Power Creep.
Right.
But he could get good. Like, if someone builds a deck that's based around winning Edge, and then they're able to use him and don't get cocky consistently, then suddenly you're blowing up an objective just with Don't Get Cocky and Cole Sarah. So that could be good.
Yeah, no, it could be.
The objective itself is very interesting because...
Double-sided, like baby.
If you're playing against a Sith deck that doesn't attack much, it pretty much sits there undamaged the whole game and is awesome. I've won a lot of edge battles with this. But against like a Navy deck, they just come in right away, knock it for one. You don't have Killing Cold, five battles of Hoth. It pretty much sits there and is damaged.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those ones that gets turned off when it's damaged, so it definitely has a limited amount of response. It's also double-edged because you can't, once you've decided to use it, that card's going in the edge battle.
Yeah.
Right? And so it happened to you last night, I believe.
Yeah, I got
right?
cut pretty bad with it, with the double-edge.
Would that double-edge?
I desperately needed Echo Caverns, and it was first turn, and I was like, well, you know, hopefully I'll draw into it next turn. The deck's kind of based around it. So first turn I do a battle. He blocks. I do Desolation. Boom, Echo Caverns. I'm like, you have got to be kidding. I would have drawn that card, and now I almost certainly will not draw it.
Yep.
So that, yes, it can be double-edged, certainly.
Yep. And the rest of the cards, you know, X-Wing, Renegade Squadron X-Wing, you've been having a little bit of luck with that using a specific deck type that we might get a chance to talk about later.
I like it just anyway. It's so cool that for two cost, you're playing a Swindle that has tactics.
Right,
and versatility.
True.
That's
very
a really good card.
Very versatile. Stinging Insult, which I still feel like people haven't had a chance to play in that effective moment where you're like, I'm going to make you defend. I think the one time I did it, that my opponent was like, yeah, I was going to defend with that guy. I was like, oh. Okay. And so I was fairly disappointed, and they were like, yeah, I was going to defend with him anyway. I was like, oh.
Just so you know, I'm the one who tells you that.
Yeah,
every time someone plays.
You're lying.
That, yeah, I always say, oh, I was going to defend with him anyway.
It wasn't you. It was somebody else.
I know.
Somebody who I don't think would lie to me like that.
I've said it to like four people so far, and they're always like, oh, so I wasted it. I'm like, yeah, I guess you did. But someone in our meta, Neil, came up with a good idea. He played this, and he looked at the guy and went, your mama is so fat. So we've come up with a thing that when you play a stinging insult, you actually have to
insult somebody?
Well, you have to do a your mama so fat joke.
Why does it have to be your mama so fat? I can have a stinging insult against you that's not the your mama so fat
joke. Yeah, but the problem
is... It might make you cry, though.
Right, exactly. It might be too stinging.
Yeah.
Whereas we want it to be more of like a socially acceptable, funny insult. So this is a new rule. If you listen to the show, whenever you play this, you have to do a your mama so fat joke.
Your mama.
So, but I think it's going to be great in the future when we can have like an all smugglers pod. I mean, an all smugglers deck with tons of smuggler dudes. Right now, it's kind of eh. And plus, it's in a bad pod with Colsera, so we may never play it anyway.
We'll find out.
Yep.
All right, so keeping going up towards what I think might be the best light side objective, the middle ground here, is Frozen Refuge.
You're so crazy. That's the best one, man.
I don't know. I'm gonna stick with Knowledge and Defense being the best one. So Frozen Refuge is a neutral objective, one limit one per deck. It generates three resources and has a four health capacity. It comes with what I think are the key cards in this deck, or this objective set, are the two different droids that come with it. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, the WED droid is great in a Hoth deck.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is if you're just playing him to combo with Frozen Refuge... That's just one of each, so you're not going to hit that combo very often. But if it's in a Hoth deck, he's great. You know, he's pulling off damage from stuff. You know what he can do? He can make your last defense of Hoth, which they damaged once to make it worthless, he can just keep refreshing it every single turn if they can only put one on it.
And so the one time that I got to play, I played with Colsera, and it was against you. It was against you, against your Lucrative Contracts deck. I put it out, and you're like, that is going to just rail me because I can't do enough damage with this Sith control deck. to take out an objective, and every turn that I try and ping it a little bit, you're just going to heal it up. And I was like, yep, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
And I'm pretty sure I used much more colorful language because I was pretty annoyed.
Right. Well, I mean, this is a family-friendly podcast.
Yeah. He can be really game-breaking in certain decks.
Yep. The other droid that I think is really strong in here is the FX7 Medical Assistant. 3 cost, 2 health, 1 white tactics, has a reaction. After this unit is focused to strike, remove 1 token, any type. I really like that this is like a key word now from FFG. In parentheses, any type. From a target enhancement or character unit.
Yeah.
That seems really strong.
It's really good. I've said this before. The thing that makes me nervous about him is he has to actually strike.
He does have to strike.
And so he's going to be a big-time target. But having said that, I was playing a deck, and I just couldn't get enough units on the board, and some dude, I think it was Neil, was just repeatedly using this guy to keep refreshing people like Luke and Han, and it was devastating. He just crushed me.
Yep. It also comes with some resources, which was nice in terms of – so this was like one of those pods. I think when Tiny saw it, was like, well, this is a pod you put in any deck that you need resources.
Yeah. The problem is one of them is a Tauntaun.
One of them is a Tauntaun. It does have that problem. Against Sith, it will die. And then Echo Control Center, enhance your player. Enemy events cannot target other friendly enhancements, which is actually really nice with the mine and that scum pod.
Yep.
The proximity mine.
Yeah, explosive charge and also...
Oh, explosive charge. That would
tear the ship apart.
Yep. Right now, those are the only two options for it, but those are... It's really good when you can stop it.
Yeah. Anytime you can keep Echo Caverns alive longer, you have a better chance of winning the game.
Or a multitude of other character enhancements.
Yep, definitely. And then it's got Battle of Hoth, which, as we said, is a good card. It's a little less good for light side. Because there's not as many of them, so you can't quite plan on getting a bunch of them together quite like you can with Dark Side, but it still can be a really useful card.
Very useful. And so, wrapping up this Force Pack review, 2 weeks after the fact.
Way to not be there, Ben.
Yeah, I try my best, man. Busy life.
You and your good life decisions, how dare you?
Trying to get that next job. I know, I'm a terrible person. Is this a time to plug in the possible places I might be playing in the future?
Yeah, actually, that's perfect.
Yeah. For those of you at all interested, I will be potentially, most likely, 98% certain, leaving the Southern California area.
Whoa, don't say it, Ben. You're just kidding, right?
I wish, a little bit. Sometimes, some days I wish. So I will be, there's a couple places on my list. I've had a couple job interviews, a couple offers, ranging from such exotic locations as Bozeman, Montana, Eastern Washington in the Tri-Cities area. Yeah. I'm pretty excited about an opportunity in Washington, D.C. and then moving to the D.C. area. So, depending on where I go and who's there, you might be picking me up as part of your Star Wars meta. How exciting is that?
Yeah, it'll be a sad day for us when we have to pretend that you're dead to us.
Wow. Wait, what? You're going to do what?
So this is also a casting call for a new podcast.
I don't know if you know this, Tiny, but the internet works everywhere.
Once you abandon us, you are dead to us. Simple as that.
Oh, my God.
Well, yeah. Sorry, man.
Well, talking of flame wars, just wait for the flame war that happens when she kicks me off the podcast.
Why did you get rid of the only person we could tolerate?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, from me against you, the charge I would lead against you.
Well, what I would do, if you were to somehow leave of your own volition, I would replace you with somebody way more annoying than me so that people would be like, wow, that Tiny Grimes is really reasonable. See, I made the mistake of having a really well-thought-out, reasoned partner. I won't make that mistake again.
You definitely won't. I can imagine that being the case. Okay, so let's do this last pod, last objective set. It's Knowledge and Defense. It's a Jedi objective. When this objective is undamaged, you retain friendly units destroyed during an engagement. Did you hear that, Tiny?
Yeah, yeah.
During an engagement to their owner's hand instead of discarding them.
Way worse than how I thought it was.
I the reason I have this as my favorite pod for the light side, and it has to do with the fact that Colsair was so bad. Frozen Refuge seems to be okay, but not amazing. Is that I've actually had a lot of luck with these cards in a Jedi deck that I've been playing.
Losing to me, right?
we could define losing in more detail if people want. I think what you have to clarify is that I had you dead to rights, and then I made a mistake because I had been traveling all day and wasn't thinking properly.
Is that what it was? I thought it was my really good bluffing abilities.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you can define. I don't know about that, but.
Yeah, well, we'll get back to that later as we talk
We'll do that a little bit. But I've had a lot of. I wasn't really crazy about the Daughters of Alaya, Alia, Daughters of Alia. That sounds about right.
Sure.
They're a 2/2 unit with a 1 white tactics. They have a really interesting ability that I've actually used pretty effectively. It's one of those things. I've been using it in a deck that really wants to control the Force. And so especially if you have out
self-preservation.
Thank you. Self-preservation. I'll get this card in my hand and be like, oh, I want to play this first turn. She'll have 3 icons. It'll be really easy to control the Force. But I always have to hold it back because it's much, much better, especially in a time of where people play a dark time for the Rebellion, to let 2 or 3 damage be done to different objectives. Play her, commit it to the Force, and remove that damage using her ability, which is after you commit this unit to the Force, remove 1 damage from each objective you control.
Yeah. I haven't gotten to fully use her yet, but for 2 cost, her ability is pretty strong. White tactics. She's basically like a Twi'lek loyalist that's harder for the Sith decks to kill and has a really cool ability.
Yeah.
And has 2 Force icons. So
2 Force icons.
It is a lot easier to control that Force.
The other cards in there that I'll talk about this for a little bit. So Yoda's Protection, which is a 0 enhancement objective after enhanced objective is declared against, after an engagement is declared against enhanced objective, place 1 shield on it. It's a free shield, repetitive free shield. Who doesn't like that?
I'm a little bit disappointed by it. I don't like that when, if you can't put it on
Secrets of the Yavin 4.
Yeah, and trigger that ability.
Nope,
but what I do like is that if you're not playing the Guardians and you're playing some other deck in the future that really wants to have this specific objective out, like let's say you have Obi-Wan's objective so you can get all the draw and you have a zillion Force guys, you can stick this on it and make it that much harder to kill. I do like that.
Yeah. I know when this objective came out, this objective set was spoiled a couple weeks before the Force pack came out. Tiny and I had a lot to say about it in terms of the fact that it comes with a 3 cost event in it, but without any resources. And so this 3 cost event has 3 Force icons confronted with terror. When damage is dealt to a friendly unit or objective, your opponent must instead divide that damage among any number of units or objectives he controls. It is really expensive. But, Tiny saw this yesterday. I was playing it. The objective, the deck I was playing that had this in it, wasn't terrible on resources. It has 6 in there. 2 of them being Tauntauns, which isn't great. But it does have, 4 resources. And because the type of deck I was playing, mostly the idea is to use the weenie cards, right? There have been a bunch of times with this. The couple times I played it where I will have not drawn enough units in my hand. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be a really bad turn for me. And either I'll attack or defend. And my opponents are like, yes, I've got this. And it's happened a bunch of times where they defended like something with like the Snowtrooper Vanguard. They're like, and I do. And they'll have Veers out. They're like, and I do 4 damage. I totally kill your guy. And I've been like, well, now I'm going to play Confronting the Terror. So you do 4 damage to yourself. Is that okay?
So you have gotten to use it. Against
I've gotten
me,
to use it.
Against me, you didn't use it. How many times have you been able to pull it off?
Twice, I think. Twice out of four games, maybe.
That's not too bad.
That's not too bad. Especially when I'm only running one copy of it.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that changes things a lot.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's a testament to how often, because Jedi have such a plethora and so many other types of cards other than characters in their objective sets, how often it can happen where even when you only have maybe five resources, you don't get enough characters to play.
Yeah. The nice thing about the card, especially if you're only playing one, you can bluff the card.
Mm-hmm.
Like
leave it open. Well, I mean, if you have a bad hand, yeah. Right? Like just leave three resources open.
Right. You play the one guy you can play. You have three resources open. They have the Devastator out, and they look at you funny, and you go, "What? I can't just let you roll in with a Devastator and blow everything up. I can't let you do that yet," or something like that. And
right.
Then they're like, "Oh no, he's got it. Damn, I can't attack."
Then they don't attack,
and you're just kind of going, cool, I bought myself a little time with my awful hand I had.
Sure. And then the last card in there is Protection, which last night turned out to be a really amazing fate card. Not that I'd ever thought it would not be an amazing fate card.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing fate card.
I love that card. Yep. Being able to put a shield in during the edge battle and surprise your opponent who had it all mathed out is a bad deal.
Bad deal.
And it's another card I feel like is a next level card where you can bluff it. Like, you can attack with somebody, do the math yourself of, if I had a protection in hand, this is what would happen, and make them go, he must have it. He's not just going to go in and let Yoda die.
Right.
I have to assume he has that card and do my math around that. And because of that, I can't block. I have to let it through or something like that.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's a good mind games card. Lots of mind games in this game.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, so that wraps up our review of Assault on Echo Base. I'd say overall, it was a good pack. I like the pack. I think long-term it's going to be a good pack as well.
Yeah, I definitely, when I first opened the pack, I think I was up there with everybody. I was like, this is a really disappointing Force pack. But I think as I've played it, I've again realized that just because it looks disappointing doesn't mean it doesn't not only shake up the meta and how the game is played just after this one pack is released, but the cards actually tend to be better than I think just reading them like the first time.
Yeah. I feel like this pack really helped Darkseid, and that Darkseid has a lot of legitimate top-level decks, which I'm really excited about.
Which is funny that you say that, because now we're going to talk about two different light side decks that we've been playing.
Yeah.
Even though the dark side got the big boost.
But I'm not sure either of them are legitimate. Like,
yes,
they're both
right, so
decent, but I don't think they're as good as, say, Smuggler's Caverns.
Right. Or the way the dark side now has Desolation of Hoth that runs so effectively.
Exactly. And I mean, dark side has like eight different builds that they can say are really good decks, whereas light side I still feel like is really limited. All
right,
so what deck have you been playing? You've been hinting about this deck.
Yeah.
What has it been laid out for us?
It's the reason why Knowledge and Defense has been so interesting for me is because I've been playing an all Jedi deck right now, and so I can remember.
I have to stop you. I assume, like me, you name all your decks even if they're bad. So what's its name?
Oh my god. Does it have to be creative? Because the only thing I can think of it's Jedi Rush. It's a Jedi Rush deck.
But
Jedi,
is it a Rush deck? It doesn't have any blast icons.
Well, Jedi Weenie.
Yeah, Jedi Swarm or Jedi Weenie.
Jedi Swarm, something like that.
All right.
I don't want to name it because I feel like that's a terrible thing to do to the community.
There you go. So he's playing
my ego isn't that big.
So Ben is playing an unnamed Jedi Weenie deck. Okay, go ahead.
Type of Jedi Weenie deck. And so what it has in it, so the objective numbers are two copies of 1, 2, 5, 45, and then one copy of 48 and 53. Do you know what all those? It's two copies of 1, 2, 5, 45, and then one copy of 48 and 53.
One copy of 48 and 53.
Yeah. And so those objectives, so it's two copies of Yoda, two copies of Luke, two copies of Secrets of Yavin 4 with the protectors, two copies of Preparation for Battle, which is that neutral Hoth that gives you the speeders and the damage prevention at less than 4 on the dial and extra blast damage at more than 4, and then one copy of Self-Preservation and one copy of Knowledge and Defense, giving you two Godals and two Daughters of Alia to play with.
So that's interesting, because when I was trying to build a Jedi weenie deck, the way I was building it was with Obi-Wan and all Force users. So you've been finding the Preparation for Battle pod to be really useful?
Yeah, because a lot of these units have shields on them, right? So the AAC-1 speeder tank has a shield. Mm-hmm. The protectors, which I'm running 4 of, have shields. I'm running Protection, which has shields. The weenie in the Hoth objective you can discard gives a shield. You have the, if there's a Hoth objective in play, use one pay to one resource, give a character a shield. There's a lot of shields in the deck. And so with the Preparation of Battle in there early, it makes it so that you can defend and not take damage. Late, and you saw this yesterday, late it gives me, especially if I'm controlling the Force, it gives me 2 or 3 turns where I'm just pounding damage. Right, like, yes, I'm getting to that, you know, 9 on the dial, but then all of a sudden everybody's attacking and everybody has blast damage on it, and you're like, oh, well, that's going to be much harder to defend.
Right, and then if you do the math incorrectly, you still lose.
Right, well, I mean, that's always going to be the case if you do the math incorrectly for the second game in a row.
I love how I got home and I look at my text and it says, like, I'm really mad that I still lost those games.
It was gah! I'm so mad at myself for losing those games. Because here it was, right? I mean, I think this is what it was, and I think this is a testament to some of the versatility in the deck, was that we played against both of your top tier, and nobody can see this, but I'm using my finger quotes when I say top tier, top tier dark side decks. And in both cases, if I hadn't been essentially brain dead, which is the only way I can describe it, because everybody else around me saw how to do it. Everybody else was like, oh, yeah, that was really common sense. Like, if you played this game at all, you should have known how to do that. But if I hadn't been brain dead, I would have won against you. Like, I would have beaten both your Desolation of Hoth deck and your Devastating Sith deck.
Yep.
And those are your top decks. I mean, you know, I consistently don't see them lose. And not only were they losing, but they were losing with only maybe taking out 1 or 2 objectives, which is also not something it does.
Yep. Yeah, it was pretty good. I will say I'd like to rematch the Devastating Sith since I didn't get any resources at the start.
That's fine. That's
but
fine.
I was really surprised with how well it did, because I haven't found...
I would like to point out to everybody in listening land, so I told Tiny I was going to point this out. So Tiny was really disappointed that he didn't get any resources in his game. But turn 2, he plays, what's that event called?
The Admiral's Orders.
He plays Admiral's Orders and then plays the Devastator. So turn 2, he had the Devastator out and then complained for 3 more turns in a row because he didn't have enough resources to play Palpatine. He just didn't have enough resources. And I was like, you can't have a turn 2 Devastator and complain about not having enough resources.
Yes, you can.
You can't. That's not fair. That is not like a thing that you are allowed to do.
This is true. But yeah, it was the deck ran really well. I was surprised.
I was surprised. So we were. It's good to know that we were both surprised about how the deck
put out a lot of guys. It held the Force, which, you know, against Desolation of Hoth, that's not that shocking. It doesn't really care about the Force. I just punch you in the face and say, go ahead, ping me and I'll battle off Hoth it away. But Devastating Sith, it's really hard to hold the Force against that deck. And you did every turn. That game took like 10 turns where I finally blew up an objective on turn 10 to win.
Right.
And I shouldn't have even done that. So, yeah. No. That one, you had to go all the way. That one might have taken 12 turns.
No, you took out 2 objectives. So it was 10 turns.
There you go. So, yeah. But basically, what is the deck based around? Is it just as simple as flood the board with little characters?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's generally what it is. Flood the board with little characters. There's no, and I think that's one of the benefits for it. So, like, the first couple times I played it, I didn't even see Luke or Yoda, right? Mm. So I played it last week and won two of the three games. And in those games, I didn't see Luke or Yoda.
Okay.
And so it wasn't like I was getting Yoda and then holding down the Force. I was getting Yoda. It's really strong if you can get that self-preservation on the first turn, obviously, and keep it around for a little while. Those extra Force icons on the units that you commit to the Force really make the deck. But it's not terrible because a lot of the units that you can play have two Force icons, which is better on average, right? You can put it on the speeder tank. You can put it on the Daughters of Alia. You can put it on your Godals. They all have two. So that's giving you six if you have those three out there or a combination of those units out there.
Yeah, I'm just realizing, so you only have one self-preservation. So
yeah, it definitely can be hit or miss without that self-preservation.
So the fact that you got it both times against me was just like ridiculous luck.
Did I get it both times? I thought
pretty
I drew
sure
in.
You did.
I thought I got the first game, I got it after you destroyed an objective.
Oh, that might be.
So that wasn't the case.
Yeah. It feels weird because you've got these Godals in there that if you don't have the Force, they're absolutely worthless.
But there's only two of them.
Yeah, but it's two cards that are essentially
dead
cards.
You know, so they were out there. What happened when I got them out there and I controlled the Force Tiny?
Yeah, yeah.
You did everything in your power to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Especially because I put your feelings on
it. Yes, I was going to say, it wasn't just you had them out. You were insane and put trust your feelings on them. And so I was like, oh my goodness. And then he had a 3PO out. So I had to do crazy things like I played two Force Lightnings on one Godel.
Yep.
That I never thought I would do.
Right. Ever. So, I mean, it's one of those things where if you have them, you know, and they have the opportunity to use them, they're going to mess with your opponent really strongly. If you don't have them, they're still two edge Force icons. It's not a bad Jedi card to throw out into an edge battle.
Yeah. That's true. Are they two? I was thinking they might be one.
They're two.
Okay. Yep. All right. So, surprisingly decent deck. I'll be playing it with this week on the stream. Maybe I'll claim it's mine and name it just to be mad.
Like just, I'm waiting to see what the name you have is for this deck that you stole from Neil.
All right. So, now we're moving on to my deck. And it is, I called it Renegade Leia.
Oh my God, you have a name for it. You're the worst person in the world.
And there is a little kerfluffle that apparently 2 weeks ago Neil emailed me, not the exact deck, but certainly the same archetype and a very similar deck. And I just kind of read it. I was busy and emailed him back something like, looks like a Leia deck, thinking like, looks like a terrible Leia deck, as they all are, and ignored it. And then yesterday, or 2 days ago, I was like, oh my goodness, this looks really strong that I just came up with. And I, quote, invented or made this new Leia deck. And Neil saw me playing it, and he's like, is that the exact same deck I emailed you? I was like, what are you talking about?
That never happened. And then Tiny covered his mouth with some ether, and he passed out and woke up and had no memory of it.
So apparently I'm a thief and a liar and a terrible person.
Yeah, but everybody listening to this podcast knew that already.
Not intentionally, though. All right, so basically this deck is Leia and Renegade Squadron and being able to blow up Leia with a lot of different ways. So you use two Han pods to get two copies of Swindle. I put in two of the Kolsera pods so that I could have two copies of that X-Wing. The point is I wanted to be able to have only four Rebels and six Smugglers. So I have two Swindles, two of the X-Wing, and then two of the You're My Only Hope to bounce Leia back and forth. And so I'm able to consistently bounce her, and then if I get Renegade Squadron, which I usually do because there's a lot of just ditching your whole hand to get to the combo, I'm just bringing her back every single turn and then replaying her. So the specific build I was running was first two Han, two Kolsera, and two Renegade Squadron, and then two Leias. And so the last two slots, I've used a couple different things. I was using Rogue 3, thinking Rogue 3 plus Wedge plus Leia would be amazing. It gives me the gear to put on Han so Han doesn't insta-die. But I took that out and put in Red 2, who's really strong with Leia. And it also gives me that astromech upgrade that I can put on either Red 2 or Renegade Squadron for more damage. And it's basically a deck that's won most of its games. But it's
until
more
you
of
came
a,
to the store and started playing hardened. Not, until you came to the store last night and started playing hardened battle ready
no, I did
warriors.
I beat Gabe playing a good deck, and then I played Neil and made a slew of mistakes and still should have probably had it. So it's hard for me to give a good estimation of the deck. I certainly played it bad. I mean, it's kind of a new deck. It's a combo deck. It's you have to kind of get a feel for it. And I'm not asserting that's a top deck, but I think it's a viable, fun alternative. And people don't see it coming at first. They're just kind of like, okay, it's a rebel deck with some smuggler stuff. All right, I know where this is going. And then you're like, oh, cool, I got my Leia. And they're like, okay, Leia, that's not very scary. And then when you start cycling Leia, they're like, oh, my goodness, this is bad. And one of the tricks I like to do is play, like, Leia, Echo Caverns, and another one-cost dude, blow Leia up, and then throw down Renegade Squadron. So I got essentially 9 resources or 10 resources on that turn just by blowing up Leia. Then I go rescue her and just repeat the same thing the next turn. Mm. And that is really strong. It lets you just flood the board with stuff.
I mean, I haven't seen it played. I came in at the end, tail end of you getting kind of a little stomped by Andrew while playing it. And so I don't know if I have. I mean, we, you know, way back when, right? What was it? Second episode when we talked about the unlimited Leia combo.
Yeah.
Back when you could just do it and it became an infinite loop of Leia-ness. It's just interesting to see, you know, and I'm not saying, I think that's exactly what Leia was designed to do, right? It's supposed to be a kind of broken, not broken, but like a fragile combo.
Yeah.
Type of card where, like, if you happen to go up to somebody who isn't prepared for it and hasn't seen it before, you have the advantage and can do some serious damage.
Right. And she's that card that I think is only going to get better as the card pool gets expanded and there's more different ways to trigger her and put her into play in unexpected moments and things like that. I feel like she's a card that has a lot of growing room and potential, and she's finally reached a point where she's decent now, and I could easily foresee a deck, you know, 6 months from now that's one of those top level elite decks that you have to be like, all right, well, your deck handles this and this, but how does it handle a recursion Leia deck? And you're like, oh no, I hadn't planned for that. Yeah, I need to rethink this deck. I think it could reach that level.
Sure.
All right, so that wraps up what we were playing this week. Ben, what's your card of the week this week?
My card of the week this week is going to be Forward Command Post.
It's a good card.
It's a good card. We talked about it a lot already, so I won't belabor it. The ability to get that extra blast damage on a shielded card is just – it really does add something. Like I said, I've been playing that deck, that version of the deck with the Death Squadron and Star Destroyers. And so it goes into battle. It shields itself. If it's unopposed, it does 5 damage to an objective. Mm.
That's pretty strong.
It's pretty strong.
Yeah. And, it's just a really good offensive unit, and it's a non-limited resource.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you can play a couple of them a turn.
Yeah, I feel like there's going to be a deck based around, like, that, the control rooms, the command center, where you're able to just go, like, first turn, a trillion resources, second turn, executor.
Yeah, I mean, it's that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
It definitely has felt like that in the games that I've played with that version of the Desolation of Hoth. The times I've played with it, it has felt like, oh, look, here's Mahdi and a resource Chud and Forward Command Post and Desk. Okay, so I'm going to do the next 2 turns, I'm going to put out 6 resources and see what I can do with 6 resources.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a pretty phenomenal card. Yeah. My card of the week is kind of boring, but it's Battle of Hoth.
So boring.
My favorite cards are these pro cards, and I really think this is one of them, especially in a Hoth deck, especially with us being in a Hoth cycle where not only are your cards Hoth, your opponent's cards are Hoth, and there's just so many little tricks, and it has three force icons.
Yeah.
It's such a good bluff card. You put it down, they're like, oh, you got a twist there, and you kind of give them a little wry smile, like, you got me. They pass, and you're like, oh, you're screwed. There's a Battle of Hoth.
I sure, that sounds about right.
Yep. So, all right. I think that wraps it up for this week, man.
Episode 16 in the bag, Tiny Grimes. Next time, we get to talk about a whole set box of cards. We're just going to do a three-hour marathon of reading the pods, right?
At that point, like 12-hour. I think we should play a couple games live, review them as we're playing. Yeah.
Don't say things that you can't follow through for with the fans, Tiny.
Yes, it'll probably just be. We might not even do all the cards at one shot. It might just be two.
Oh my god, that'd be impossible.
Yeah. So. Stay tuned for 12 podcasts of us reviewing the Edge of Darkness box. And I'm trembling a bit. I must admit, I kind of feel like this is the real Christmas. Like, once you have kids and cover your ears if you're under 8, Santa ain't real. You know what is real? The Edge of Darkness. That's the real Christmas.
Yeah, I guess. This year seems like it.
So there you go.
Yep.
All right, man.
All right. That's it. That's the episode, everybody.
Till next time.
May the force be with you.